From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everyone. Great to see you. You know, in this modern age, we often rush through life, the next thrill, the next adventure, the next restaurant, the next brand new episode of a radio show.
But sometimes it's important to stop, take stock, maybe listen to some old radio shows so you can learn to appreciate them.
Could not have put it better, Carl. That's a beautiful sentiment slash excuse to play reruns while we're on vacation. By the way, what are you doing in your week off?
The usual, Peter. Martial arts and making moonshine.
That's great. Well, you might get some tips with your recipe from our first guest, Martha Stewart. She joined us in November of last year, along with panelists Roxanne Roberts, Alonzo Bowden, and P.J. O'Rourke.
And we started by asking her to describe exactly what it is she does.
Well, I am a teacher, and I teach people what they want and need to know, all about living.
I mean, you say people need to know. Do people need to know how to make their own brass andirons from melted jewelry? Because you do these incredibly elaborate things.
Well, I don't think I've ever done that, but I have had metal. I think that people want to know how to do practical and everyday things, like how to peel a head of garlic. Do you know the easiest way to peel a head of garlic?
Oh, no. A head of garlic is way out of my league.
Okay, so here's what you do.
Yes.
And it's like magic. You put the head of garlic, the whole head, in a stainless steel bowl.
Yeah.
About 12 inches in diameter. Right. And you find another stainless steel bowl exactly the same size, and you put that over the first bowl.
Yeah.
And you shake. You hold it on the rims, and you shake, shake, shake for about maybe a minute. Really hard, and all of a sudden, like magic, every clove of garlic is nicely peeled, unbruised, and in the bowl.
Wow.
Okay.
Now,
try that, every 500 of you.
You tell me this, and what I imagine is you going into your secret laboratory for a week until finally you come up with this genius method of using two bowls. Is that more or less how it happened?
It's not my actual discovery, but it is certainly a fabulous thing for everybody to know.
Now,
it's like how to get the pomegranate seeds out of a pomegranate. Do you know how to do that?
No, tell me.
Take the point of a sharp, sharp knife,
yeah,
and just score through the skin, make, and then quarter it, okay?
Yeah.
Then break it into four quarters, the pomegranate. Turn the quarter of the pomegranate skin side up in the palm of your hand and hit it with the back of a wooden spoon over a bowl. And if you just keep hitting that skin of the quartered pomegranate in your hand, all the seeds will fall out neatly into the bowl and you will be left with an empty skin.
Right.
You haven't bruised one of those beautiful little ruby red seeds in the pomegranate.
I actually have a fairly serious question. I want you to imagine that you've been invited by a friend, a close friend, somebody you're very easy and casual with over to dinner, and they take out a pomegranate and they start removing the seeds incorrectly.
Well,
could you?
No, there are many ways to take the seeds out of a pomegranate.
Right.
This is by far the quickest, fastest, most practical, and neatest way to do it.
Let's say that they are removing the seeds in a non-optimum way.
Right.
Could you, Martha Stewart, in that situation which I have described, stop yourself from telling them how to do it better?
No.
You couldn't.
It would be hard.
You just don't have that gear. You can't just stop and go.
No, but it's fun. And they will love me forever. Solve a lifelong problem of how to get the
I guess it has been a problem.
Yeah. Is it hard? I want to ask again, because I'm interested in what your life is like, because I've seen your shows and I've read your magazine. One of the things I admire so much about you is you make everything sort of excellent and classy and lovely, no matter what you start with. And we had some challenges for you to see what you would think of to do with this.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. So, for example, let's say I say, Martha, here's your project. Boom on the table, a can of Spam.
What would I do with it?
Yes.
Oh, I would open the can.
Yes.
I would slice it into about between an eighth and a quarter of an inch slices.
Mm-hmm.
And I would fry it in butter, just lightly saute it in butter, nice butter, unsalted butter. And I would eat it with Dijon mustard on nice country white bread, crusty bread. It is delicious.
You were a bachelor guy in a former life.
I
made that breakfast.
Is it good?
First of all, you've done that. What you just described.
I have. I mean, I grew up in a family of six kids.
All right, it's time to throw down, Martha Stewart.
Uh-oh.
Velveeta.
Oh, I love Velveeta.
Oh, come on!
I do, though. I if I'm in somebody's house and they have Velveeta cheese, I do take a piece of it, and I really like it. I'm not kidding. But I have never bought it.
Ever.
Never.
Beer nuts.
Beer and nuts?
No, beer nuts.
What's beer nuts?
Ha! Sorry.
I don't know what those are.
That's all right. You don't really want to know.
Okay.
Have you ever looked yourself up on Wikipedia?
I have. It's hideous.
It is hideous.
It's wrong. It's all wrong. They even have my date of my first and only marriage wrong.
We actually wanted to ask you about something we found on Wikipedia, so if it's not true, you can correct us. According to Wikipedia, you once dated Sir Anthony Hopkins, and Wikipedia says that you broke it off because you couldn't stop thinking of him as Hannibal Lecter.
That happens to be true.
No, really? But was he over for dinner and you were like chopping the vegetables and he said, I'll help you with that, Martha. And you were like, ah!
The most charming man. And I went out to dinner with him and then I went back and I saw his piano. He plays a piano and he has a lovely house. And I wanted to invite him to my house in Maine. I have this big old house in Maine. And I kept thinking, I don't know if I can do that.
Really?
And I didn't. I was too afraid.
It would probably be easier if you didn't wear that hockey mask all the time. It's very comfortable, he said. Well, Martha Stewart, we are delighted to have you with us. It is a pleasure to have you here, but we have asked you here today to play a game that we are calling...
It's a Bad Thing.
Oh, my gosh.
So you're wonderful at helping people come up with great do-it-yourself projects. We're going to ask you about three not-so-great projects somebody really put together and displayed on the Internet. As helpfully collected by BuzzFeed. Get two questions right, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on the home answering machine for one of our listeners, of course. Carl, who is Martha Stewart playing for?
She's playing for Hannah Hudson of Tacoma Park, Maryland.
Okay, well, poor Hannah, she's probably going to not get your voice.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
Here's your first question. People love to put logos on things on which they do not belong. One big fan of Louis Vuitton put their logo all over their what? A, their house. B, their wife. See their assault rifle.
Their house.
Their house. No, their assault rifle.
Oh.
It's a charming AK-47 with Louis Vuitton logos and a bright green ammo magazine. Just the thing to bring to a firefight at a soiree.
Oh.
Next question. People love to reuse common household goods in their crafts, as I'm sure you know. There's a whole website out there devoted to making crafts out of spare what? A, fingernail clippings. B, tampons. C, sodium sulfate, a byproduct of paper mills.
Fingernails.
I'm going to ask you something. If I came to you with a small container of fingernail clippings and said, make something, could you do it?
Probably.
So you're going to stick with that answer, fingernail clippings?
Yeah.
It's tampons. The website is called tamponcrafts.com. You can go there to learn how to make Christmas ornaments.
I bet you could probably find the fingernail thing, too.
You're probably right. All right, Martha, one last question. Let's see if we can pick this one up.
Okay.
People love to make homemade beauty products. So if you want something crafty for use in your bathroom, you could buy from Etsy, of course, A, tanning lotion made with real gravy, B, soap with real razor blades inside, or C, exfoliating wipes that are just squares of sandpaper.
Maybe the exfoliating wipes.
Are you going to stick with that?
Yeah.
It was actually the soap with the razor blades.
Ew.
That's very unpleasant. And they sell that on Etsy?
They do sell it on Etsy. They're soap. It's translucent soap, so you can see the razor blades inside. And these soaps are labeled for decorative purposes only.
Oh, I don't like that. Sort of like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. Carl, how did Martha Stewart do in our quiz?
She needed two correct answers to win for Hannah Hudson, but
Hannah, I'm so sorry. I'll do my voice for you, Hannah, anytime.
Really? Oh, yeah. Hannah, that's an offer. Martha Stewart's holiday offerings can be found at Macy's, Home Depot, and Staples. Martha Stewart, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
What fun to talk to you. Thank you, Martha.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. We're listening back to some of our favorite Not My Job guests of recent months, and one way a notable and important person can become one of our favorite guests is to talk about something other than why they are important and notable.
Case in point, new CNN anchor and chief Washington correspondent Jake Tapper. You may know him for his years of political reporting or his book about the Afghanistan war.
But when he joined us in December, along with Adam Felber, Brian Babylon, and Amy Dickinson, we just wanted to ask him about his date with Monica Lewinsky.
That was it was one nice dinner date, and it was certainly nothing.
So here's the thing.
You were saving that.
Everybody thought I was kidding, but I'm not kidding.
I did go on one date with her before the story broke. It was one of the most...
It was before the story broke, but after the story happened, if you know what I mean.
Very surreal. It was definitely one of the most surreal moments, especially for a journalist. I had gone out to dinner with her. She seemed like a nice girl. She was moving to New York. Seemed very eager to get out of Washington.
Can't imagine why.
Well, I wasn't really sure what was going on. She seemed a little naive, but you know, a lovely girl, nice, whatever. And then I went on vacation with my dad, and I was in the shack that passes for an airport in Little Cayman. My dad and I went scuba diving, and there was the local newspaper, the Caymanian Compass, and it was the story about, you know, the White House rocked by this scandal, and there was, oh, my God.
This must get you to this day pride of place in the White House press room, right?
And no, you know, it's so long ago and so many years ago that people don't really talk about it much.
I do.
At least not when I'm around.
Right? No, she never forgot the date, man. She still thinks about you, man.
I did want to talk to you because it's amazing. You wrote for the Washington City Paper and then Salon, and you worked your way up to, I think, the extremely impressive position of chief White House correspondent for ABC News. When you got that role, was there like a ceremonial passing over of Sam Donaldson's hair to you? How does that work?
No, he's still got it.
Well, that's his. He's not letting...
It's a great chair. It's a great honor, and... it's a demanding job and everything. Sometimes I forget where I am, and we all have our impressions of the president that we do.
No, wait a minute. You don't mean like an impression like, I feel he's a serious man who has problem connecting. You mean like, here's my Barack Obama impression. Listen
right,
up.
Like more Rich Little-esque.
All right. Okay, well, now you've
pitched
that.
Well, my only point is that he came into the press room, and without even thinking, I said, hello, everybody. And he looked at me, he smiled, and he goes, that's pretty good.
Have you ever been yelled? I remember Brian Williams once told us this story of getting a phone call from a very angry President Clinton about something that Brian had reported. Have you ever gotten anger response from any of these powerful people you've reported on?
Sure. All the time.
I mean, they get in your face and they yell at you?
They mainly set, you know, they mainly release the hounds kind of thing. It's right. mainly their people. But, you know, every now, one time I was walking, you know, the, one of the cool things about working at the White House is that you do tend to be able to bump into people in positions of power. And Secretary Clinton had just gotten the job of Secretary of State, so this is early on. And I ran into her and I said, Senator Clinton, I'm sorry, I mean Secretary Clinton, how are you? It's funny, which honorific do you prefer? Do you prefer Senator or do you prefer Madam Secretary? And she said, I prefer either of them to what we call you when you're not around.
Whoa! Whoa!
Which
That's
makes
a good
me,
one.
That makes me think, Jake, that like the cabinet is impersonating you guys.
Yeah.
I'm Nick Tapper. Hey, Monica, nice beret. Whoa. You know, they...
They probably did.
Well, Jake Tapper, we are delighted to talk to you, but we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
It's Mr. Bojangles to you.
So you're named Tapper, but you're a reporter. That makes no sense. So we thought we'd ask you three questions about an actual Tapper, Bill Bojangles Robinson. Some say he was one of the greatest tap dancers ever. Get two right, you win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who is Jake Tapper playing for?
He is playing for Andrew Rosso from Northfield, Minnesota.
All right, ready to go, Jake?
I am.
Here we go. Your first question, Bill Bojangles Robinson was one of the greatest tap dancers in history, but he also had another distinction. What was it? A, he invented the sport of greyhound racing. B, he held the record for the backwards 75-yard dash. Or C, he introduced Thai food to the American public.
I'll go with B.
You're going to go with B. He held the record for the backwards 75-yard dash? That's
yeah.
true. He could run backwards very fast.
Wow.
So who did bring us Thai food?
I imagine a very large number of Thai people. That would be my guess.
Brought it all the way from the old country.
Yeah, exactly. All right, second question. Bojangles' most famous routine, of course, was the stare dance. You've seen him do that with Shirley Temple. He says he invented that routine spontaneously when what happened? A, he was going downstairs drunk. He tripped and managed to keep his feet all the way to the bottom. B, he was watching an early version of the Slinky descend some stairs in his home and went, aha. Or C, he was at the bottom of the stairs, the King of England was at the top of the stairs, and it just happened.
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A? He was drunk, fell down the stairs, caught himself, hey, I just did a dance. No, it was actually C. He says, the story he told, that he was getting an award from the King of England. King of England was at the top of the stairs. He was supposed to go up there to meet him, and he just danced his way up spontaneously.
But also, isn't that stair dance? He goes up two, he comes down one, he goes up three, he
yeah,
comes
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
I would not do that to the king.
No.
I don't know.
You don't want to keep the king waiting.
No.
Yeah, you're
knight. It's like
you're
going
to use that knighting sword for a very different purpose.
Yeah, exactly. This is an exciting thing because now if you get this one right, you win. Here we go. He was an inspiration to many dancers, one of whom, Fred Astaire, played tribute to Bojangles in Fred Astaire's movie Swing Time by doing what? A, falling down a flight of stairs onto his face, getting up and saying to the camera, you get what you pay for. B, saying why, I'm nothing compared to Bill Bojangles Robinson. Or C, doing a big dance number in blackface.
Oh, God. It's probably C, which is horrific. okay, I'm going to go with C, and I should also just say I do not support that.
Yes. You're merely choosing it. Sadly, it was true. That's what Fred Astaire did. It's rather one of the more uncomfortable moments for fans of Fred Astaire, in that he does this big number not only in blackface but in this big cartoony suit that was supposed to represent Bojangles' style. He meant it well. What can we say?
Carl, it was a different time.
It
back
was
then.
A different, very different time. Very different time. Carl, how did Jake Tapper do in our quiz?
Jake, you had two correct answers, so you win for Andrew Rosso.
All right.
Well done. Jake Tapper is the author of the extraordinary new book, The Outpost. It's going to be in the New York Times bestseller list, deservedly so. Go get it. Go read it. You will thank me. Jake Tapper, thank you so much for being with us on
thank
Wait,
you,
Wait,
Peter.
Don't Tell Me. Pleasure to talk to you. Bonnie Raitt is one of those very rare women in music. She's had a long and acclaimed career. She's lasted decades, and she's never had to appear with a skimpy dress and a python draped around her neck.
At least not in public.
The Great Blues Woman appeared in our show last year along with Tom Baudette, Paula Poundstone, and Jesse Klein, as well as guest scorekeeper Bill Curtis, and we asked her what it was like being on the road after so many years.
It's really fun. It's as close to running away with a circus as you can get. And, you know, you don't have to do as many chores as you do when you're at home.
That's true. Has the lifestyle on tour changed? Has the quality of groupies improved, for example?
Oh, that's so funny. you know, I'll tell you what's changed is the internet has made maintaining those relationships at home much more fun and compassionate because, you know, you can do Skype calls. It's cheaper. You can be in whatever clothes or no clothes you want. It really, it makes makes those calls a lot more, those calls to home a lot more fun. And, and that's a big change, you know,
right.
From the first. It's fun partying in, when you're young, but as you get older, it takes its toll.
So in the 70s, partying with groupies, now naked Skyping. And you feel... This is
yes.
An improvement.
With groupies.
With groupies, of course.
They're ones you're monogamous with.
Yeah, I understand. So we were really curious and interested in your upbringing because you became, some people say you're the greatest female blues guitarist ever, but you did not grow up in that environment. You grew up a Quaker of all things. Is that right?
Well, yeah, but that brought me into the counterculture early on. I went to the summer camps when my dad would be touring in his Broadway shows.
Oh, I should say that your father, of course, for those who don't know, was the amazing and immortal John Raitt, who created
Star of Oklahoma and Carousel.
Right on Broadway,
John
McCain.
But, you know, I'm a kid of my times, and the folk music craze was taking over when I was 9 or 10, and Joan Baez was on the cover of Time magazine, and Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Bob Dylan. They all, you know, I was ripe as a preteen for idolizing my counselors at camp, all of whom were exactly imitating every folkie in Greenwich Village, and I was trying so hard to get that sallow, hollow cheek look, and it just wasn't working on my little round freckle face. So, I came into it through folk music. It was just a hobby. Never expected to do it. You know, I was a cheap opening act. I didn't need a band. I could play open for James Taylor. I did a little ballads. I did a little modern stuff, and I thought it was a cool way to make some extra money during college, but the last thing I was expecting was to be offered a record deal at 20. I told the college people I'd be back in a year, and I guess that didn't work out.
You know, I was just there. They're still hurt.
You know, that gave me the Harvard Arts Medal a few years ago. Even though I only went 2 years, it was great.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is generally true that the coolest people dropped out. Pete Seeger, Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg. That's the thing to do.
Wow.
So there you go. I'm going to go do it again. They said I could come back and audit classes and finish whenever this wasn't working out.
You see, when you were going back and forth from Radcliffe to Harvard, you know, to blues clubs, was that weird to make the transition? Did you have to stop outside before you went into the blues club and muss up your hair?
No, you know, we all had that soulful beatnik kind of long hair thing going on in the late 60s and early 70s, and that end of the business that's more rootsy in America. They call it Americana music.
Yeah.
We're the kind of artists that get a chance to age gracefully in this business. We don't sell as many records, but here I am at 62 still with a career, and if I was dancing around in my underwear when I was in my 20s, I don't know if I'd still be doing that.
Boy, apparently I made the right choice as well.
Oh, we have found a look in this.
I know. I'm thinking, if you forgive me, thinking about these young singers, particularly these female singers and performers, are so carefully packaged these days. And I'm wondering, when you started out, when you were signed to that record deal, did the record company execs say, okay, we want you to do this, we want you to dress like this?
I told them, well, first of all, Warner Brothers was a small label there. I had Randy Newman and Ry Cooter, and they said, fine, you know, we'll pay for your records and the other kind of non-commercial artists we have, like Randy and Ry, we'll pay for them with Black Sabbath and Deep Purple. And that was the philosophy, was the big money makers would pay for the more artsy projects. But those days of not paying attention to how your image, with all the social media, I think, I just want to say on behalf of Lady Gaga and Taylor and, you know, even Norah Jones doing so well, and Adele, they're incredibly poised and mature in the way that they're approaching their career, and I'm really, really impressed with this crop of, especially with the crop of women singers I just mentioned, but there's a lot of guys, even if they're being managed, they seem to be very self-aware. There's a lot more sophistication.
If I can back up, Bonnie, you said that Black Sabbath and Deep Purple helped basically pay for Bonnie Raitt and James Taylor. And so we've got, like, we can thank Smoke on the Water for, like, Love Me Like a Man. Is that
exactly
what you're saying? Oh, man.
You know, Katy Perry helps pay for all those Americana acts that don't shave, men and women.
Is that a genre, the non-shaving music?
Yeah, I think hairiness is making a big comeback.
Oh, I like to listen to adult hairy contemporary. You know, that's my taste.
That is so great.
Well, Bonnie Raitt, we are delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
I'm sorry, did you say Bonnie Raitt?
You, Bonnie Raitt, are a multiple award-winning legendary musician. Change one little letter and you get... Donnie Raitt, who worked at the Des Moines, Iowa Metro Waste Authority for many years.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing.
So I should have looked him up. We were just close to there.
I know. It's amazing what you will find when you do a typo in your Google search. So we actually called up the Des Moines, Iowa Metro Waste Authority and found out a little bit about Donnie Raitt. And we're going to ask you, Bonnie Raitt, about him, Donnie Raitt.
Oh, that is so fantastic. I was trying to figure out what you might ask me.
That's what we're going
to
do. So if you get two right, you win a prize for one of our listeners. Bill Curtis, who is Bonnie Raitt playing for?
Peter Jacoby from Woodbury, Connecticut.
Here we go. First question. Donnie Raitt worked for the Metro Waste Authority for 31 years, a long and fulfilling career. What is the MWA stated policy on disposing of old medication? Is it A, quote, mix with items such as kitty litter or coffee grounds and double bag them? B, quote, dispose of them immediately on their expiration date unless you have Vicodin, which, trust us, is always fun. Or C, quote, pour them out into a big bowl and create a fun party grab bag game.
Oh, I love that third one, but my 20s are over, so I'm going with number one.
The kitty litter. Yes, you're right. Yes,
and
kitty litter.
And what if you don't have a cat or you don't drink coffee?
Buy a cat who drinks coffee. Next question. Donnie Raitt retired from the Metro Waste Authority in 2008. Until then, what was his specialty? A, waste tasting. B, shaming of people who don't recycle. Or C, composting.
Oh, boy. I'd have to say the third one.
The composting. You would be right. Yes, he was the working foreman. Donnie Raitt was at the composting center.
I'm so glad to hear so many in my family. There's not that many Raitts around. I'm very proud. Maybe I'll call them up.
You should.
We'll talk about kitty litter and composting, coffee grounds.
Yeah, Skype him, you know.
Yeah. It could be. After 31 years of working in the waste, that could be the biggest thrill of his life. Last
exactly,
question.
Especially if I'm wearing what I'm wearing, well, almost wearing right now.
Donnie!
You tease.
Last question. Donnie Raitt used to joke with his coworkers that he was really what? A killer robot from the future, B, Elvis, or C, Bonnie Raitt's cousin?
Oh, I think C, but it might be sounding too puffed up.
No, it is in fact true.
All right.
And he, being one letter away from you, used to claim that he was your...
I bet you we have DNA strands that are connected. There's not that many Raitts.
It's possible, but he apparently is not related to you. By the way, we were told we wanted to talk to Donnie, but we were told he doesn't use the phone much.
Oh,
so we talked to his former colleagues about him.
Oh,
by the way,
God.
But we did find out from them that he is a fan. So there you are.
Oh, I'm so glad that you told me about him. That's fantastic.
Isn't it exciting? Bill, how did Bonnie Raitt do in our quiz?
Bonnie's perfect.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
All right.
And Peter Jacoby will love you for it.
Bonnie Raitt's newest album is Slipstream. It's terrific. Pick it up now. Bonnie Raitt, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Come around crying that you just can't win. You thought this one was different, now it's gone again. You just can't believe, baby, why's it happen to me now? You step out on the track in the pouring rain.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you so much. We are going over some of our favorite recent interviews this week. There's one we wanted to bring back because it's one of the few interviews we've done with a real-life couple.
And they are totes adorbs.
To translate, they are Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell. And when they came on the show in August of 2012, along with Charlie Pierce, Adam Felber, and Paula Pell, they discussed their famous YouTube video about a special birthday present.
I really have a love of sloths. I always have.
Now, wait a minute, because... sloths?
Yes.
Of all
sloths?
Things?
Question mark? Exclamation point?
Sloths?
Well, I just want to interject that, you know, for most guys, this might have been a red flag that every night they're getting to bed. And their bride-to-be is watching a video of a sloth laying in the road in Costa Rica. This is nightly, a nightly occurrence.
Yeah. How did you get enamored of sloths?
I don't know, because they're so vulnerable. They're so very vulnerable. And I think, I don't know, they take their time.
So you really like sloths. All right. So then what happens?
And we're show business types, so we have access to animal wranglers who bring, you know, animals to movie sets. So I get a hold of one of these guys and find out if I can get a sloth brought to the house for the afternoon for her birthday party.
All right, so you get a sloth.
Well, there's more to it than that. I mean, I have to amend my homeowner's insurance policy. That's not a joke.
Really?
Yeah. To have this wild animal in proximity to other partygoers required an umbrella, contingency in the policy. So we get all the proper insurance. I tell her to go into the room on her birthday. The surprise has arrived. Take the dogs. And by the time I get into the room to invite her out into the living room, she's put it together that since I asked her to take the dogs in the bedroom, clearly there's another animal in the house. Oh, my God, it must be a sloth. And then she's hyperventilating, crying hysterically by the time I come back in the bedroom.
And the world knows this because you videotaped Kristen as she figured this out.
I had anticipated videotaping her see the sloth in the living room, and I started running the camera when I walked into the bedroom to invite her out into the living room. I didn't expect the show was going to start in the bedroom.
Right.
What kind of sloth was it? Was it the famous three-toed sloth? Or?
Yeah, it was a two-toed sloth.
Which meant we couldn't cuddle it. Which
yeah.
For the amount that I paid for this thing, I was expecting a little more than cuddling.
So you guys, you guys are a real-life Hollywood couple, and you went and you made a movie together called Hit and Run. It's kind of a getaway caper. You play, Dax, you play Charlie Bronson.
Yes.
And you're a guy in the witness protection program. Kristen,
yes,
Kristen, his very nice girlfriend, and the challenge is to get her to Los Angeles before the bad guys get you.
Yes, I'm so in love with her as I am in real life that I decide to leave the safety of witness protection and take her to L.A. And then the second we leave, Bradley Cooper, the bad guy testified against, he finds out Tom Arnold, the U.S. Marshal, he starts chasing us. And it is, yes, it is an action comedy. But at the center of all that is Kristen and I's kind of real-life relationship on display for all to see.
Now, Dax, you also wrote and directed the movie.
Yes, sir.
And so was that weird?
It was an ego orgy.
I can imagine. But I'm also trying to figure out what is it like trying to direct your own girlfriend as she says lines of affection and love to you that you have written.
Well, I guess autoerotic comes to mind.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Can we do that again with more genuine worship, please?
Right. I don't believe you.
I don't believe it.
I just don't feel like you're seeing me on the pedestal I'm on.
Well, Kristen and Dax, it's a pleasure to talk to you, but we have in fact invited you here to play a game we're calling...
First thing you're going to need is an adorable collective nickname.
Before there was Brangelina... Before there was Bennifer, remember Bennifer?
Mm-hmm.
There was Dick and Liz. That would be Dick and Liz. No, that was Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, the first and greatest of celebrity couples of the tabloid era.
Mm.
Dick and Liz. And before we go any further, do you guys have a collective nickname?
We gave ourselves one, honey. You want to hit them with it?
Cracks.
Love it. Love it. And I'm sure Us Magazine is known as being a cracks addict. They can't get enough of you. Well, we're going to ask you about Burton and Taylor and Burton, the Hollywood pair that knew how to live large. Get two right of the three questions. You will win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, in their home voicemail. So, Carl, who are Dax and Kristen playing for?
They're playing for Derek Stacey of St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay. Ready to do this?
Let's do it.
Well, here's your first question. What did Burton once say about the woman he married twice? A, quote, "She'd drive me crazy, of course, but all I had to do was tune out her voice and check out her rack," unquote. B, "I'd make a joke about being a Liz-aholic if I weren't a real alcoholic." Or C, "She has a double chin and an overdeveloped chest, and she's rather short in the leg," unquote.
Oh, wow.
This does not sound healthy.
No.
I'm going with, personally, sweetie, I think A, but you, I defer to you.
No, I trust you. Let's go A.
The one about checking, the one about whenever she started to drive him crazy, he'd just tune out and check out her rack?
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm afraid it was C. She had a double chin and an overdeveloped chest. Burton said, quote, "This most beautiful woman in the world stuff is absolute nonsense," he said of her.
What a peach.
He was an adorable guy. All right. You have two more chances. The Burtons met when they were both married to other people. They had a tumultuous affair in the public eye. They got divorced. They married each other. They divorced each other. And then they got married again. They decided their second marriage should be more restrained than their first. Where did they do it? A, in a rural village in Botswana. B, Times Square, high noon, Saturday. Or C, in their guest bathroom.
Oh, no. C.
You're going to go for C in their guest bathroom?
Yeah.
They were like, oh, let's just...
I'd love to get married in a guest bathroom.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Would that be appealing?
Well, look, if you get winded, you take a seat on the commode. You get high on top of the shower.
I already know we've gotten it wrong because we're talking so much without telling us the answer. So I'm going to change my answer to B.
Okay.
Times Square, high noon, Saturday?
Yeah.
Because they wanted to avoid attention.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Sounds great, honey.
We're taking more time.
The moment. The moment.
This just in. I like A the best. I'm not a good test taker, guys.
She does have some detective skills. You're going to go for A?
Yeah, I'm going to go for A.
Yeah, it is. A. It was a royal village in Botswana.
Oh, God.
They were on safari in Botswana. They decided, what the hey, let's get married again. They found a magistrate in a local mud hut village to officiate. All right, this is the last question. If you get this right, you win. Liz and Dick were known for their luxurious lifestyle. They had mansions, and he gave her enormous diamonds, as is well known. In fact, once they did what? A, had pastrami from New York airlifted to them in Rangoon. B, rented an entire yacht just for their dogs. Or C, bought a limousine made of platinum.
I happen to know this one because I was reading about celebrities who have had food flown into them.
I was just going to say A.
Yeah.
We agree.
Buddy, good job.
You're gonna agree on this?
Yes.
I like that. How about you stand with each other? Even
you're
when
wrong.
You're wrong.
Oh. Oh, no.
Yeah, we just made that up, sadly. No, the real answer was that they rented a yacht for their dogs. It's not. What happened was, and you guys are animal lovers.
Said the woman with the sloth at her birthday party.
Yeah, but I did buy him a Rolls Royce.
That's right. What happened was is they went to London, and there's a quarantine for pets. They couldn't bring the pets into London. So for $20,000, Liz Taylor rented a yacht, which she moored there right in the river, the Thames, for her dogs. To wait out the quarantine.
Well, then that's totally understandable. Now that
Carl, how did Dax and Kristen do in our quiz?
Peter, they needed at least two correct answers to win. For Derek Stacey, they had just one correct answer.
But can we get extra points for being a good team?
Carl, did they get extra points for being a good team?
No.
Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell are in love, and they star in the new movie Hit and Run. Dax and Kristen, thank you so much for joining us.
Yay!
Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Novelist John Irving, who wrote some of the most famous American novels of the late 20th century, joined us in June of 2012, along with Amy Dickinson, Maz Jobrani, and Roy Blunt Jr.
Peter asked him about some of the important themes he's known for in his work.
We found a chart on your Wikipedia page. I don't know if you've ever looked at it.
That's true.
And on the Wikipedia page, somebody has developed a chart of all of your novels and lists of themes and check marks.
Oh, yeah, somebody said that to me, actually. And I didn't know where it came from.
Yeah, the themes are, and these are the ones, New England, sex workers, wrestling, Vienna, bears, deadly accidents, and absent parents are on the list. We kind of imagine you there with a checklist, checking them off yourself as you went through it.
Well, that, you know, that's a fair list of what I would call superficial details.
Yeah.
I would say death of people you love and don't ever want to lose is probably more primary on that list.
Sure. Do you ever surprise yourself when you sit down to write a novel and the next thing you know, another bear pops up?
No, I don't surprise myself. because I begin with the ending of books and I know where I'm going, which I know makes it sound terribly manipulative.
No, it's actually...
Which it is.
It's interesting to me. We've read that you always know the last line of your novel before you start writing it?
I didn't always know it was the last line. That is, the first four or five books, I imagined that I'd actually been forward enough to have written a first line, only to discover over time that it was, again, the last line. Mm. So it didn't become recognizable as a process until my sixth novel, The Cider House Rules, but at which point I just realized, well, I get endings first, and I should recognize that.
Right. We understand that you write the same way. You don't use a computer. You write either longhand or in a manual typewriter. Is that correct?
I got rid of the manual typewriters. They were too fast.
Really? So now you're just writing longhand?
I've always preferred writing in longhand. I've always written first drafts in longhand, and it became so cumbersome just to try to keep enough moving parts to repair the typewriters, which had not been manufactured for 20 or 30 or 40 years, that I was beginning to feel I was living in a machine shop, and I was repairing the typewriters all the time instead of writing, so I got rid of them.
Right, so now you just write longhand.
It's true. There's not much that can go wrong with a pen. Just use another one.
I understand. Well, John Irving, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
The World According to Garp.
Your novel, The World According to Garp, is about sex, castration, bears. Garp, on the other hand, is about raisins and nuts that you eat when you're hiking. We're going to ask you three questions about Garp. Get at least two right, you win our prize. One of our listeners, Carl, who is author John Irving playing for?
John Irving is playing for Jamie Mitchell and Jessica Roy from Worcester, Massachusetts.
So we all know we're talking about Garp, right? You know, the stuff, the trail mix. Ready to play?
Sure.
Here we go. I can sense your excitement. Here we go. Despite what you might have heard, Garp is not named for the acronym Good Old Raisins and Peanuts. Its name, say linguists, most likely comes from what? A, an Old English word meaning to gobble or eat greedily. B, a 19th century product called Emmanuel Garp's nutritious legume mixture. Or C, it's onomatopoeic, it's named for the noise people make when eating it. Garp, 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 garp.
You're serious, aren't you?
Serious as the tomb, sir.
I guess I'd go with A.
You're going to go with the Old English word meaning to gobble or eat greedily.
Well, it just, it's probably wrong, but that's my history with multiple choice. And I wouldn't want to refute it. So even if I'm wrong, well, I used to feel this way when I did the SAT test, that I should have been right.
Right. I hope this is a redemptive experience for you. You're correct. You are right. It was amazing. I think it might be from the same old English root as the word gop, you know, to like hang out with your mouth open. Yeah, so that's right. All right, next question. It is called Garp in America.
You mean there's more than one question?
Oh, yes. Don't put your pencil down yet, sir. It's called Garp in America, but in New Zealand, that trail mixture is sometimes called what? A, gravel yums, B, schmogel, or C, winna winna muckluck.
Oh, boy. Well.
You could Google it. Oh, I'm sorry. You would just have a pad of paper.
Yeah, but I know how to do the Google thing.
You do?
I do, yeah, but right. there isn't time, and I could not spell the answer, which is C, and I choose C.
You're going to choose C, Winnowinamucluck?
That one.
I wish they called it Schmogel. Sometimes they call it Scroggin as well. All right, this is exciting, though. You have one right with one to go. If you get this correct, you win. Gorp isn't just a snack. It was also a 1980 film. Gorp. The film was about what? A mountain-dwelling madman who makes trail mix out of dried people. B, a mischievous camp counselor with a mad crush on a sexy waitress played by Fran Drescher.
Oh.
Or C, a 13-year-old girl who adopts an alien and calls it her galactic origin rascally person.
I'm trying to think which of these movies I would detest least.
Yes.
I think I'll go with the first one.
You know, the mountain-dwelling madman who makes trail mix out of dried people?
Yeah, better than the Fran as a waitress person.
You don't buy Fran as a waitress?
Well, you want me to guess again?
I do.
Okay.
I now understand why your novels are so long. You take your time to work your way through stuff. Everything happens in its own time. I admire that.
Who played the camp counselor?
I don't remember his... Well, I'm not going to say, am I?
Trying to trick him.
Yeah.
It's a trick.
Well, I guess I would be foolish to not say that it sounds like B.
You would be correct.
Yay!
It's a... Gorp was a low-budget summer camp comedy in which Miss Drescher played the unattainable sex object.
Aww.
Carl, how did John Irving do in our quiz?
John had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Jamie Mitchell and Jessica Roy.
Do you feel any better about your multiple choice quiz?
Does anyone lose on this show?
Not if I've enjoyed their books as much as I've enjoyed yours.
Consider
it repayment, sir.
That's very kind, thank you.
John Irving's newest novel is In One Person. It's in the bookstores now. John Irving, thank you so much for being with us. A pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
That does it for our Best of Not My Job show.
If we ever put together a best of our best of shows, this should be on it. Why? We could even do a best of our best of best shows.